minutes of the morning. Appeal number 06-3144, United States versus David Green. And Mr. Threlkeld, welcome back.
Thank you, Judge. May it please the Court, Counsel. I'm Brian Threlkeld with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois. I'm here arguing on behalf of David Green. There's no question that the Court committed error in this case in failing to inquire whether Mr. Green was aware of and understood the appeal waiver provision of his of the plea agreement. What is the important issue is that the district court's failure to do so was not harmless. It was plain error, and for that reason requires remand to the district court. Now, Mr. Green must show a reasonable probability that for the failure of the court to ask if he was aware of the appeal waiver, that he would not have pled guilty to the charges against him, or that he would not have pled guilty pursuant to this plea agreement. First, a reasonable probability is a fairly low bar of proof for us. We need to prove that the chance that he would not have pled guilty according to this plea agreement was at least not negligible. The best, probably the most emphatic evidence for Mr. Green's Mr. Green's lack of awareness of the appeal waiver provision is his pro se notice of appeal. It's not an easy read, but it's clear it's clear from the notice of appeal that Mr. Green is not what you would say is a trusting kind of guy. You can't read that notice of appeal and think this is a guy who would readily have taken a leap of faith that is required when you agree to an appeal waiver and acknowledge that the court's sentence may be higher than what you're anticipating. As in the case of United States versus Sura, at Mr. Green's change of plea hearing, there was no adequate substitute for the queries about the plea agreement's waiver of appellate rights, that the queries that the district court was required to make but failed to make. Also, as in Sura, Mr. Green has no legal experience apart from his prior convictions, and in fact, his education is quite limited. There's ambiguity about just what schooling he has had. The probation officer did note that evidence even of his high school graduation and his postgraduate education was not verified. The court did ask Mr. Green if he had reviewed the plea agreement with his attorney, and he affirmed that he had. But again, the court did not make the critical inquiry of whether he and his attorney had discussed the appeal waiver. Now, lest the court be misled by the government's characterization of the appeal waiver in this plea agreement as an indispensable element in such a case, it's entirely plausible that a man of Mr. Green's limited education and sophistication, possessed of what we might say is an idiosyncratic and cantankerous temperament, might well have seen that his agreement to plead guilty and not put the government to its burden of proof was entirely satisfactory compensation for what the government was offering in the plea agreement. And he might well have been entirely honest in saying that he read the plea agreement but in fact he missed the significance and consequences of the appeal waiver provision.
70 months for four armed robberies?
Pardon me?
A 70-month sentence for four armed robberies? Does he really want to undo that?
Oh, I'm sorry. For I thought you were referring to the 1970 convictions for four armed bank robberies.
That's what we're talking about in this case, aren't we? Have I mischaracterized it?
No, you're quite right, Judge. I thought you were referring to a different part of his criminal history. I'm sorry.
No, that's what he got in this case.
I'm aware of that. And
that's a highly favorable sentence.
I understand. I have had copious correspondence.
I'm sure you've dotted
Green
the I's and crossed the T's.
I have no doubt that that he does want the conviction vacated.
Okay.
There's no question in my mind.
Okay.
But it's a reasonable question on Your Honor's part, so thank you. The government places at least some reliance on the presumption that this court has to make that his statements, his answers to the questions during the colloquy in the court of appeal in the district court were honest and were truthful. But his honesty is not the relevant issue. Rather, his accurate understanding of what he was doing is the issue before this court. And again, as in, Sura is very clear on this issue, that a defendant can be replying to the court's questions candidly, and that he has read the plea agreement and understands it, and can still be ignorant of important parts of it. Just in closing, I feel compelled to make a point on one aspect of the government's brief, and perhaps it's minor, but I feel on my client's behalf I should bring it up. The government says that we're claiming for the first time of the district court's error nearly 2 years later, and that we're setting forth an 11th-hour claim. And there's an implication there that our pursuit of this issue on appeal is somehow dilatory. The government's language and tone on this question of how long it took us to raise this issue on appeal is really gratuitous. The criticism suggesting that we were procrastinating in this litigation ignores what everyone who's familiar with the record knows, that it took 15 months between the time that I requested the transcripts and the time that we finally got them. The court reporter was very ill. I believe she had cancer and for extended periods of time was unable to work. I made lots of oral and written requests and inquiries on this, and as soon as we got the transcripts, we got to work on them. And I'm reluctant to get into this because I'll have to say in all other respects, Mr. Blakey has been really a model of professional courtesy and considerations, and my direct dealings with him have been a pleasure. But insofar as the brief criticizes Mr. Green's case as dilatory, that's just a cheap shot, and it's unwarranted. I wouldn't be serving Mr. Green well if I ignored those criticisms and failed to take issue with them. Well, for the reasons stated, apart from any rebuttal I may have, we ask the court to find that the district court's failure to inform Mr. Green of and determine that he understood the terms of the appeal waiver was error and was not harmless, that Mr. Green's plea thus cannot be regarded as knowing and voluntary, and so we ask the court accordingly to vacate Mr. Green's conviction and remand the case to the district court. Thank you.
May it please the Court, Jack Blakey on behalf of the United States Appellee. Let me begin by addressing counsel's last point. That particular portion of our brief was never intended to be a criticism of the length it takes to pursue an appeal, and I did not intend it as such, and if counsel took it that way, I apologize. It was simply a point that the defendant had not raised this issue in the lower court or either at the change of plea or at the sentencing, where it's clear from the record he had an opportunity to review the appellate waiver yet again, or in his pro se notice of appeal, which counsel relies heavily on to attempt to establish his burden of showing plain error in the case. I don't take the same inferences that counsel does from that pro se notice. If one is able to read it through the handwriting, you don't see anything in that about a misunderstanding of the appellate waiver. In fact, what you see is simple buyer's remorse. The defendant did not like the ultimate sentence that he got, despite the fact that in the plea agreement that was negotiated and bargained for with the government, where the only benefit the government had was, in fact, the appeal waiver, a benefit which obviously is lost given my presence here in this courtroom. But the only benefit that that we had was an appeal waiver, and the benefits he received were substantial.
Despite, now, in a case like this, why the government doesn't say, "I'll let you withdraw your plea," and you face a sentence here. I did some calculations. He'd be in the 121 to 151 month range if he didn't get acceptance of responsibility and he testified at trial, which he'd have to do to have any kind of defense here.
Your Honor, yes, that's a fair assessment of the facts. The defendant's prospects at a trial would be bleak at best. He confessed.
Or non-existent.
Correct. And in this case, he also received not only the United States relinquishing its attempt to do an upward departure, which was noted as a potential factor in the case by probation, but we also agreed to acceptance despite the fact the defendant ingested crack cocaine after his initial arrest. All of those factors took the defendant from a very high sentence to a very, I mean, obviously I can't speculate how Judge Norgal would have resolved those issues, but it's clear from the record as a whole that he went from a very high sentence to the low end of a guideline range. I think that undermines the defendant's burden here, where he has to show a reasonable probability that but for the technical violation of Rule 11, he would not have entered this plea, and he cannot carry that burden. Additionally, Your Honor, beyond the aspect of showing that he would not have entered the plea had the court mentioned the appellate waiver, the defendant also has to show in the record that he, in fact, did not understand it. We have unsworn conclusory statements in his brief, and we have the absence of the appropriate inquiry by the court on that specific issue, but that's not the entire record, and as the court knows, the entire record is at issue when addressing whether a technical error is, in fact, a plain error. Here we have a defendant who was he was educated. Counsel claims that that's not, there's conflict in the evidence on that. Well, it wasn't verified, but the defendant himself, under oath, told Judge Norgal, "I have an associate's degree from SIU, Southern Illinois University." I don't know how the record could be any clearer on his education. He also indicated that he swore under oath that he read it, the plea agreement, that his counsel read it, and that he answered any questions that he had. I could go on multiple portions of the record, including the plain language of the waiver itself, but if the court has no questions for me, I would rely on my brief, which sets those out in detail.
Very briefly, I appreciate Mr. Blakey's response to my last issue, and I certainly accept it at face value. Just say that what Mr. Blakey notes is the absence of any complaints about the appeal waiver, despite various opportunities to address it, simply are evidence that Mr. Green was unaware of the appeal waiver. And apparently was unaware of it until I raised that point to him when we started corresponding and having discussions by phone. I think other than that, my brief addresses the issues that we want to have addressed. And if there are no questions, thank you.
Thank you. This case will be taken under advisement. Ms. Bonamici, I noticed that the government's brief lists your title as Assistant United States Attorney Editor. Is that your new position? I understand that. But very interesting. The court will be in recess. Thank you.